difficult to get a man to understand something when his income depends on his not understanding it. And that sort of guides my moral compass as a coach, because yeah. I could say that I can help you lose weight in 30 days, you know, 50 pounds in 30 days. But I understand the science there, and that's not true.
Welcome to the Health Science Coach Podcast. My name is Drew Garner, and I'm a health science and physical education teacher. This is a podcast to help students, parents, and recent graduates learn about pathways into healthcare and sports medicine careers. These industry professionals lay out how their experiences have helped them get to where they are now. If you enjoy this content, please subscribe to the channel or download through your podcast player. Thanks again for spending some time with us today. Now let's dig in. Today, we get the pleasure of meeting with Wren Jones. Wren is an online trainer. Wren, how are we doing today?
Man, I'm doing fabulous, man. Happy to be here, Drew. It's decidedly better than being nowhere, for sure.
I can completely agree with that. And today is a Friday. I'm not sure when this will be released, but it's April Fool's Day. And I got some jokes played on me by my 8-year-old and 5-year-old this morning that were very funny, and they need to work on their punchlines a little bit, but it's been a good day so far.
That's awesome, man. I love it.
So, well, let's talk about what you do as a personal trainer. And, you know, as a online only personal trainer, can you give us a little detail about your career and then what you do as far as being a personal trainer and working with clients online?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So my career has been sort of concurrent in two different places for the majority of the time. I was doing training in person originally, and I have a business background. I went to school for business, actually. Not originally, but that's where I graduated. So I didn't have the same concerns that most trainers have, because typically trainers don't realize that their job is sales and marketing. Their product is training, right? Yeah. So I was from a sales and marketing background. So I did coaching in person. And right away, probably a month in, I thought, and this was in 2014, I thought to myself, you know, if Uber can take over transportation without owning any cars, right? And Airbnb can dominate hospitality without owning any hotels. Yeah. Why does a trainer need a gym in 2014? Why can't I facilitate this thing online? So right away, I started trying to build an online process. There's got to be a way for me to be able to get information, the workout, to the person via the internet. There's got to be a way for me to accept a payment via the internet. There's got to be a way for me to manage the client, get them to send me data, check-ins, et cetera, via the internet. So let me just piecemeal this thing together and see what we got. So that's been the bulk of my career, doing both, until I decided that I just didn't want to be in person anyway. I got into this business at 40 years old. Let me say that too. So I didn't have the youthful exuberance that most trainers might have to be up at 5:30 every morning, stand around for 9 to 10 hours in the gym. It wasn't, it was never a goal for me to pursue it in that way.
Right. In that big box realm, or even small box realm, having a space, you know, being in before, and being a personal trainer is kind of like an athletic trainer. You know, you have to be the one there to open the gym. You have to be the one there before the train or the client's there to get ready to do your session. And then you're there after, you know, developing the program, moving on to the next parts or phases or weeks of training and what that kind of looks like. So what's a, you know, as you transferred to a online setting, now you're completely online, have been for now a little over 2 years. What is your day-to-day or weekly work regimen look like as far as a online trainer?
Yeah, I got to tell you, Drew, it's not dissimilar from a marketing or advertising, you know, employee. That's the reality. A lot of what I do is branding and marketing. And for me, you know, I always say that marketing is like asking someone on a date, right?
Right.
Branding is the reason they say yes or no. And a lot of business professionals, a lot of trainers for sure have a challenge distinguishing the two. So for me, I have a very regimented schedule during the course of the day because I need a process to submit to. I don't have a manager here.
Right.
You know, there's nobody checking on me to make sure that I'm completing my assigned tasks. So I use my phone, the Google forms, the Google calendar on my phone as a way to flesh things out. So for me, 7 to 7:30 is educational time for me. AM.
Okay.
8 to 8:30, I walk. Most trainers, when they get really busy, guess what slides away? Their own health, right? Really common in this industry. Sort of 9 o'clock, I start to take appointments from other coaches. One function of my business is that I help other coaches learn to do business and operate in the online space. And then I've got my client tasks during the day, things that I need to do for my clients. I've got my own workout in addition to the walking that's scheduled in. I have to schedule lunch because I'll sit at this desk all day and not eat. So that systematic process and that Google calendar for me is the manager that I answer to every single day. Otherwise, Drew, if I can be perfectly honest, and I don't know if the kids need to hear this or not, but I sit here and play NBA Live 2K22 all day and eat snacks. Let's just call it what it is. Let's be transparent here, Drew. No use lying to the kids. So when you're managing yourself, you really do need to lean into and have some processes and structure. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it can be kind of difficult to work for self.
Yeah, I really like that. I mean, and that hits really common with students. You know, they have their time in their classroom, and this is high school or college. When you're in class, when you're learning, and then you have your time that you should be doing your homework or working on your projects or doing your things that you need to do. You also have to take care of yourself as far as, you know, whether that's walking, reading a book that you enjoy, hanging out with a friend, lifting weights, kind of all that, just mental, personal, physical health. Mm-hmm. And then you have that time that you need to be locked in doing the things to get you to your end goal of where you want to be. And that kind of really hits hard. I really like, I'm going to write this down, but you know, you are your brand manager, and whatever your brand is what you're selling. And they might like the product, but if they don't like the branding, like you said, it's that's the reason why they say yes or no.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's really cool. So you studied, as you said, business, and you kind of went a different little bit of route. And you initially, I think, went to college with a marching band scholarship. Is that right?
Absolutely. I'm a band junkie. A music junkie. I spent the better part of the 1990s trying to get signed with an R&B group, if you believe that. I'm all over the place here today, Drew. but I always had a love for band, and I love the university band at North Carolina A&T. For those, there's an old movie called Drumline. It stars a guy named Nick Cannon. That's sort of a loose representation of the school I went to, North Carolina A&T State University. And trumpet player, man. So I got a partial scholarship for music. Originally went into the engineering department, the School of Engineering. Was escorted away from the School of Engineering several semesters later after spending more time on trumpet than I did with, Fortran and engineering and, all the other things encompassing that school. I wasn't a great fit for it. I had an aptitude for it, but not an attitude.
Right.
And of course, I'm an old guy. So back then in the 90s, people didn't go to school to become entrepreneurs in that context. You went to school to get a job that you would work hopefully for 30 years and retire from. So everything was so different back then. And, you know, I probably would have pursued another major had I been a freshman in this time, in this day, in this age.
We'll get into some of that advice for yourself as back in the day. So then switching from engineering into business, how did that kind of change? You went into business afterwards and did a couple years worth of sales jobs. How did that kind of lead, like what kind of experiences did you learn from getting that business degree and learning about branding and marketing and sales and that kind of stuff?
Here's what I learned. And, you know, and this is really crucial in a global environment, almost everything comes down to business, right? Now, it wasn't this way at the time, but even now, if you, as you see people work across the medical community, right? I have a lot of friends who are actually medical doctors. I have a lot of clients who are medical doctors, and they will express the sometimes conflicts that arise as corporate entities get very much involved in medicine. I learned from that business experience in the business in the school of business there that everything is fundamentally business. I don't think I had that perception before going into that school, and a lot of what I learned was just the basics of interacting with a brand and how to market it. And I learned how to be specifically detailed and aware of all the numbers that come through running a business. Knowing your numbers is such a great, great way to make adjustments in business. And I don't think I would have been as good at owning my own business now, or the sales and marketing and corporate entities that I worked for up until the point I got this occupation, if it hadn't been for those really fundamental business teachings. Nobody talked about that stuff back then.
Yeah. No, and I really feel like, you know, I have a business degree as well. And by using what I've learned through the business and working in marketing and sales, same sort of type of thing where, you know, everything comes back to, you know, who you know, who you are, what you're able to do with that, and then applying it into what you do. And so you worked in sales for a couple of years and then kind of made that switch, like you said, at 40 to be a personal trainer. Where did your love for, you know, fitness and training kind of generate from and get its start?
Yeah, this is another great question. It's multi-layered for me. Okay. One thing is I was a very late baby to my mother. So my older brother was 18 years old and headed to college when I was born. God bless my mother. I don't know how she dealt with that. I remember my older brother saying to me, he's probably 22. I'm probably, you know, 5, 6, 7, somewhere around there, right. You know, Hey man. He was an athlete. I never was. He said, hey, if you start exercising now, by the time you get to be my age, you'll be really strong. That was one layer. Another layer was as a band geek. And I don't mind saying it, I'm proud of it. My friends were football players. And after our practice and their practice, I would say, where do you guys go? They say, we go to the weight room. I was like, what's the weight room? It's where you go lift weights, you get strong. I said, can I go? He said, anybody can go. So, you know, if you can imagine a bunch of 15-year-old boys in the late 80s, early 90s, doing all the wrong things fitness-wise and teaching each other all the wrong things, you know, that sparked an interest for me and led me to start reading publications like Men's Fitness, Men's Health, Muscle and Fitness. I started wanting to consume it. And in the third instance for me of getting into the health space of the professional, unfortunately, I lost my mother. She had a stroke, a debilitating stroke when I was in college. And she needed health care, you know, dedicated adult care for the last 17 years of existence. Unfortunately, I lost my older sister to a car accident. Unfortunately, my older brother that I was speaking about died suddenly of a heart attack. So those incidents of trauma, I think grief comes differently for everyone. Some people internalize it. I felt obligated to pour out into the world based on what those people had poured into me to see if I could help other people not have to have those set of experiences, because to a certain extent, these were all lifestyle related issues. And you know, so I caught the bug early at 15, never stopped working out. I'll be 48 next week. And in terms of giving fitness to people, it was really through my own family experiences and managing my own grief, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, I can see how that can, you know, be intertwined between your personal feelings and thoughts about, you know, what issues and what they were able to teach you along the way and how you kind of wanted to absorb what they gave you and then put it back out. Mm-hmm. I really like that. So you've been a trainer now, like you said, for almost a happy early birthday, by the way.
Hey, thank you very much.
I'm another April birthday, so we got that.
Nice.
Another 8 years of training and kind of working through your sport, exercise, nutrition coach. Mm-hmm. And you have a connection with the Personal Trainer Development Center as well. We got to speak with them a couple of weeks ago. It was really exciting to learn about what they do over there. So let's kind of talk about your certifications, corrective exercise specialist, nutrition coach, and then the personal trainer development center.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, I sort of followed along the path of exercise. It was ironic that, you know, when I was in my mother's hospital room, she loved football. Okay. So we watched football on Sundays, and she was confined at this point. Like, she needed around the clock care. She was out of our home at that point. And a commercial came on for National Academy of Sports Medicine, certified personal trainer course. I saw the 800 number there by her bedside. I called it. And that got me into the space. That's sort of your base level qualification as a personal trainer. Yeah. You're going to be that certified personal training, certificate. That was a start for me. And it was a good start. Solid certification. It was a proctored exam. I had to go to another location to take it. It laid a great foundation. I don't want to talk too much about it specifically, because I know you've got some pertinent questions that you probably want to ask specifically about that. So I'm going to be quiet and land my plane there.
All right. Yeah, no problem. So let's start off with the NASM certification, National Association of Sports Medicine, and that's for the online training. What qualifications do you have to work through that program and kind of take that test and certification?
Yeah, absolutely. So if I'm not mistaken, and this was a long time ago, but if I'm not mistaken, high school diploma or, you know, general education degree, you know, equivalent to be able to enter into that program. Obviously, you know, you've got to have a pretty solid background in science, biological science. I mean, you're going to run into quite a bit of anatomy as you take that certification. So you'll definitely want to brush up on that. A general understanding of nutrition. They're not very specific there in terms of nutrition for that certification, but, you know, without question, 100%, you're going to need a set of basic, you know, high school diploma equivalency skills to be able to take that test. It's a fairly challenging test, to be perfectly honest with you. There are varying types of tests, some of which you can just take online, not proctored. And when I say proctored, I mean, for those out there listening, you have to go to a facility where people are watching you to watch you take that test, and they will issue you a passing or failing grade at that site. That's relatively unusual in the personal training space. I wish it wasn't, but it is relatively unusual. It heightens the seriousness of your certification and the worth that a big box gym or small box gym may put in you as a coach. So that's something to investigate for sure if you're thinking about moving down this path.
Yeah, I like that. And it gives it a level of, I'm not sure what I'm trying to say, but a level of like professionalism, I guess.
Absolutely.
As far as teachers and teaching certifications go like that, teachers have to go do that sort of testing as well. And it does get a little bit nerve-wracking having someone sit over your shoulder and watch you take a test as an adult. And you're like, oh my gosh, versus like teaching a high school class in the classroom. You know, here's our test. I'm in the room answering questions. And when you're taking a proctored test, they don't really answer any questions because there's people that are taking other different types of tests while you're taking yours. And they're just making sure that you're not getting your cell phone out and doing things on it.
Absolutely.
As far as the corrective exercise specialist certification, let's kind of talk what about the difference between that and just a training certification is.
Very, very, very good question. So first of all, I'll say this. I probably didn't need a corrective exercise specialist certification for the demographic that I work with. I coach women over 30, primarily moms over 30. I told you my background and the impetus, how I lost my mother. So that's what led me into that area. But in any case, that particular certification was, if you can believe it, even more anatomy, which makes sense. It was much more specific to observing, understanding, and correcting minor injuries. And what I found out when I got my original certification was that almost everyone I was running into had some type of injury that they sustained. There was always something to work around. And we talk about in most biological science fields, even psychological science, we talk about something called a scope of practice, right? Mm-hmm. And this is really important because it dictates what you're allowed to do versus what you're not allowed to do in terms of the person that you're working with. So because I did not have that specific certification, I was always referring someone out, it felt like, for an injury. Hey, I'm sorry, I'm not able to work with you. Your doctor has not medically cleared you because of your two previously torn ACLs. It looks like you didn't have surgery, so I'm not going to be able to work with you. So I wanted to be sure that I was able to cover the range of challenges that a client might present to me. That's one of the reasons I got that corrective exercise specialist certification. A much smaller book than the original certification. Totally fooled me because it was not in any way easier than the larger book certification was. I've learned since, Drew, that if they give me a smaller book, it's going to be problematic. Like that's how they get you, Drew. And give you, it's only 250 pages. This certification will be a breeze. Right. No, that typically means that it's very, very nuanced, complex, and detailed. Yeah. And you're in for a ride. So yeah, so I love that I have it. Looking back, I probably would not pursue it again because I've learned how to build a network and refer out much better than when I started. But it's still a great certification to have. And as an old man, Drew, it benefits me from time to time.
Oh yeah.
When absolutely. I'm banged up.
I think with that too, you know, like you said, you learn a lot about the different injuries and preventions and how to to work around some of that stuff. And with anybody, you know, probably over the age of 30 in general, they're going to have some form of medical history where they have had XYZ injury. Mm-hmm. And at least you have a general idea of, okay, well, you've been cleared, but you had this in the past. This is something that we can look at along the way of our journey as you know, becoming more fit and active.
Absolutely.
So then with that Precision Level 1 and 2 Certified Nutrition Coach, I'm assuming that's where your Personal Trainer Development Center kind of came in and got to meet some of those people?
Oh, almost, Drew. I'm getting closer to them, but we're not there yet. So that particular certification, I did learn of who Jonathan Goodman was, who is the owner-operator Personal Trainer Development Center. But that nutrition certification was one that I knew that I needed also because for folks that aren't familiar, personal trainers, when we talk about that scope of practice, we're not supposed to be advising people on nutrition. That's in most states in this country, that's out of the scope of practice of a personal trainer. Yep. And we're definitely not supposed, even with a nutrition certification, I'm not a registered dietitian or a nutritionist, which is a collegiate effort. You need a degree to be those two things, but I'm a certified nutrition coach. So I'm not allowed to write a meal plan specifically either. Okay. But I knew that, again, one of the things I kept running into with clients was they would do the exercise, right? No problem. They would adhere there. And particularly for clients that wanted fat loss or even muscle gain, it doesn't matter. Yeah. The nutritional piece was what was derailing the progress. And I said, well, I need to be able to effectively communicate nutrition to the people that I'm working with. And I need to know that what I'm saying is not off the cover of a magazine in the checkout aisle in the grocery store. Yeah. I can't say these wildly fantastic things, you know, drink a thimble of apple cider vinegar and you lose 28 pounds overnight. So I want to be credible, I want to be knowledgeable, and I want to know that the things that I'm saying are from a place of evidence-based science. So entered into that first certification, probably like a 3-month self-paced. The next certification for Precision Nutrition was a 1-year certification, much going to how to interpret and read research paper, white paper research, as we call it. Taught me how to, there were plenty of case studies for behavior modification, client-centered coaching, motivational interviewing, which is a type of It's a type of psychological approach to behavior change. So all of those things were involved there. Those were probably two of my favorite certifications that I've received because they've kept myself and my clients out of hot water time and time and time again. There's so much misinformation in nutritional research and what you see on Google and what your favorite influencer says. It's quite the mind. Nutrition is quite the minefield on social media.
Absolutely. And I've spoken with several registered dietitians, and like you said, you know, they are the college degree on nutrition and diets and that kind of stuff. It's interesting to hear the difference of, you know, kind of how you talk about it versus a dietitian. And some dietitians work specifically in hospitals and with a specific demographic of patient, diabetic nutritionist or dietitian we just had on. But then listening to you kind of talk about it, it's you know, hearing that, to me, it's each patient is going to have a different effect on their body and with their nutrition. You know, and I talk about it in health class with, I'll find a smaller female in class or a smaller male and a, you know, and then me, I'm 6'2", 200. And I'll say, okay, your level of food that you need to intake is going to be different than my level of food and percentage wise and calories and energy expenditure and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think that really hits in hard with that and gives a good understanding of where that comes from.
Absolutely.
Well, you kind of already talked about why you absolutely love your job. What is it that you find just personally rewarding about working with your patients on a weekly basis?
Yeah, I think for me, because of the fact that I chose to work with the demographic that I did, which is women over 30, and you know, for some reason, almost exclusively, I get moms, and I guess most women over 30, if they choose to, they probably are moms, but. What I find so rewarding is that the method that I use to educate for exercise and nutrition is specific enough to for them to achieve their goal, but it's general enough that they are able to pass along great habits to their kids, right? Okay. Because what I want to do, because I was, whether I was an adult kid or a child, you know, having the meeting that intersection of your parents and your siblings' mortality, right? It affects you in a way that, number one, it takes some grit to process, recover, and decide to pour out good into the world. But number two, you immediately sort of don't want other people to have to endure those type situations. So one of the things that's most rewarding for me is knowing that because of the fact I'm not giving a mom a meal plan, because of the fact we're educating her on the benefits of eating slowly, slowing down to eat, or the benefits of having protein throughout the day, or the benefits of consuming five different varied colored fruits and or vegetables during the course of the day, and why those things are important, it's very easy for them to pass that along to their children, because a lot of food dysfunction and what we call body dysmorphia, which is where people see their body as something that it isn't, typically in a negative way. A lot of those thoughts about ourselves and our bodies and how that interacts, particularly with young ladies, particularly in the social media era, a lot of that happens during imprinting around our parents. Mm-hmm. And if I can have an effect on the parent, right, to normalize things, to not get on and off the scale every 20 minutes, to not feel like they need to diet, try this diet and that diet and this diet, I know that it's going to imprint their children in a way that they normalize a relationship with food and normalize prioritizing movement for their body as just something that we do, like brushing our teeth or washing behind our ears. And they don't have to suffer through periods of their life to reclaim their health at a later state, maybe in their 40s or 50s around my age. So that's really rewarding for me.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important thing, you know, that imprinting age of the kids and where they, you know, they, what is that saying? Monkey see, monkey do.
Yep, yeah, so 100%.
Whatever they see you doing is what they're going to end up doing. And me and my wife are both health and PE teachers, so fitness is something that we kind of prioritize, and exercising, and everybody slips on nutrition. And I've been under the adage of eat what I want until I no longer exercise, and then I'll figure out the other part of it. And I mean, we eat the fruits and vegetables and all that mm-hmm. stuff, but we see it in our kids, and, you know, they'll say, oh, I'll have my workout clothes sitting out beside me, and hey, Bo, you know, throw these in the bag for me. And he goes, oh, I know what these are. These are your workout clothes. You're going to go work out today, aren't you? And I go, oh yeah. And he goes, yeah, I'm going to go play hard today too. And so it's kind of that, you know, that seeing them having you do it and learning from that, I think is really important. And I love that that's kind of what you're all about and setting that up for them. As far as misconceptions about personal trainers, you know, you're working with that 30 some odd year old female mom, for the most part, that's your type of demographic. When other people tell like their friends that, you know, they work out with you, what are some misconceptions that their new clients may have or other people may have of you as a personal trainer?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think probably the first and most prevalent is the level of physicality, right? I mean, I'm for 48 year old guy, I'm in really good shape, but I'm not your height, your weight. I'm not jumping off the top turnbuckle on anybody. I think people confuse personal trainer with fitness model or bodybuilder. Yep. Some of which are right. And there's no discrepancy there. There are people that exist in that space, but that's one misconception, that I'm going to present a completely different physicality than what they expect. There's an expectation of sort of harshness, right? Some people equate fitness trainer with drill sergeant, right? If I'm not yelling at you, if I'm not pushing you to your absolute limits every single time that you exercise, that's odd for them. Another, probably the biggest one, is my own nutritional choices. I got to tell you, I get a lot of, you eat that? You know, I'm at my college homecoming having fries. You eat fries? Yeah. I didn't know you ate fries. I don't know if you ever had fries, but they're pretty tasty. You want one of mine? Right? So there's these conceptions of a sort of a brutish, judgmental, aggressive individual. And that's what a personal trainer is. And we see that perpetuated in media, right? Like it's funny to watch your favorite sitcom and the TV dad hires a trainer and some muscle bound dude comes in that's angry all the time. But that's fundamentally, most of your great trainers are very client centered. They've studied or at least dabbled in the psychology of what they're doing. They have a tendency to extend requests through the lens of grace and not sort of overt discipline, because they understand that adult humans are going to do fundamentally what they want to. And the more I push you in one direction, the more your autonomy and agency and ambivalence will push in the other direction. You're a married man, you know, do you think I should wear the red dress or the blue dress? You know, whichever color you say, the opposite dress is going out that evening. Like this is just the normal ambivalence and autonomy and agency that humans work with. So good trainers understand a lot more about what's going on in between your ears than they are sort of, Marvel superhero built. So that's one of the biggest misconceptions.
Yeah, I like that. I think that kind of fits in really well with just the general idea of what the trainer is and what they look like. As far as, and this is kind of what we talked right when we jumped on, we kind of hit on this a little bit, and I'm going to kind of share it and let you kind of go into detail about it. But the question is what are you most proud of achieving as a personal trainer so far? And, you know, over the last 8 years, you've taken a personal training type of, owning your own business is one thing. It's starting out, changing careers is another thing, and into owning your own personal fitness business. And then taking that business from kind of the hybrid model where you see patients or clients in person and online to, even before the pandemic, you said, you know, I'm going to within a year before pandemic, I'm going to go fully online to, you know, work with your schedule and give you the freedom and opportunity to do what you wanted to do. Kind of explain, you know, that choice of 2019 and saying, you know, but within a year, we're going to move online, and how that kind of changed with your clients and what that looks like from then to now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was it was a colliding of two different factors in my life. Number one, on the economic and business side, right? I realized right away that if my income depends on my hourly participation and nobody's made a new day yet that has more than 24, then my income is capped. If I'm going to be dealing with people in person, I can literally only work, if I worked all the hours, 24 would be the total. And it would never be more than that. Obviously, I'm not going to do that. On the other end of the spectrum, and that situation, and we've touched on this, I'm old. So I didn't want to be out in gyms working that much. There's something that happens in the students here. You may not believe it yet. My mother told me a lot of crazy things that I didn't believe until I got older. And I was, oh my gosh, she was so right about everything. But I'll tell you this, the older you get, probably the more conscious and aware you will be of your time, right? You'll just not want to waste time on things that don't light you up. And personal training absolutely lights me up. However, there's only so much time, and it's a big planet, and there are many experiences. And at a certain point, you start to think about, this is why you'll see your friends, moms and dads who have corporate jobs. Maybe dad will go into real estate, or mom will, or dad will start, you know, doing a side business, or mom will. What your friend's parents are looking at is, how can they make income in the absence of spending time doing it all the time? How can they create something that sustains and pays for the household, but also allows them to step away and have a little bit of control over their time? For me, I had gotten to the decision in January 2019, like we said before we started. I said, you know, I think that by January 2020, I'd like to be 100% online. This will allow me to do a few things. Number one, it'll allow me to work from anywhere. The family that I do have is dispersed. So I've got family in the North and family in the Midwest and the West. What if I could work from wherever they are if I chose to? If I went out for a visit and didn't have to come back because I needed to be at work. Because I'm at work anywhere where there's one of these. Any place I have one of these, I'm at work. My office is right here. So the next thing was, how can I get clients to work out in my absence when I'm not there counting to 10 or saying, go to that machine? And an on-demand workout through an application seemed like the best way for me to do it. And as we joked about here before we got to this point, Drew, you know, who knew? Because I told my clients by January 2020, I'm going to be online only. I gave them a year to sort of soak that in. We found them other coaches if they did not want to make the online transition. If they did, we started the hybrid program where we scaled back on the days that we were together. Some of their workout happened through their phones, through my app. And who knew by March 2020, anyway, everybody was online. Like, I didn't know that was going to happen, you know. So it always pays to innovate. You guys listening probably don't have a good recollection of Blockbuster Video. But let me just tell you, you're better off being a Netflix than you are a Blockbuster. Don't romanticize the methodology of what you do. Romanticize the result that you create. Because Blockbuster was not in the home video business. They were in the entertainment business. They didn't realize that. So they struggled to make a transition to other forms of family entertainment.
Yep.
You always have to be aware of what your business is. My business isn't helping people work out in a gym. My business is producing a physical, mental, emotional result from prioritizing your health. If I romanticize the methodology, I end up Blockbuster. And you, well, a lot of you guys out there listening have probably only, or watching, have probably only seen it in the Captain Marvel movie when they did a throwback to the 90s and she landed on a Blockbuster Video. You probably asked your parents, what's that store she landed on? Don't be that store she landed on. So that's why I made that transition.
If you've made it this far into the episode, I want to thank you again for watching. Please subscribe, share, and comment below with any questions or comments you may have. If you're interested in more information about other professions within healthcare careers,
please visit healthsciencecoach.com and talk to your school counselor or academic advisor. As always, stay happy, healthy, and live life with passion.